and welcome to the Buyer Insights Podcast, a show about how and why people buy. I'm your host, Liston Witherell, CEO of GoodFunnel, a digital marketing agency. You can check us out on the web at goodfunnel.co. You can listen to all episodes of the Buyer Insights Podcast at goodfunnel.co/podcast, and you can grab the show notes from this episode there as well. Today, I'm really excited to have Josh Braun, the founder of Sales for Starters, and most recently, the head of business development for Basecamp in Chicago, where he helped conduct customer interviews, increase conversion rates, drive signups, and form strategic partnerships. Now, Josh is laser focused on selling, and his course, Sales for Starters, which you can find at salesforstarters.com, goes over how to sell through cold email, which includes prospecting. We're going to do a deep dive on prospecting and how to think about it in terms of unearthing buyer insights from a prospecting perspective. So I'm really excited to bring you this episode. Before I get to my conversation with Josh, I just want to give you a free resource that's available on the GoodFunnel website, and that's our Buyer Insights email course. So it's 5 lessons. You get one a day for 5 days over email, totally free, and it goes over how to unearth your own buyer insights, doing the techniques that we talk about here on this Buyer Insights podcast, so that you can come up with your own buyer insights and more effectively sell and market in a way that really is customer focused and customer driven. So if that sounds good to you, go to goodfunnel.co/buyer insights. And now my conversation with Josh. It's Liston with the Buyer Insights Podcast, and I am here with Josh. Josh, how are you today?
Very well, Liston. Thanks for having me.
Okay, and I forgot your last name. I'm blanking on it. Tell me your last name again.
Take a guess.
Braun.
Yes,
you Josh got it. Braun. Okay, I should have trusted myself, right? This is one thing they tell you in sales. So Josh is the founder of Sales for Starters, which is an online course, and he is a guru of sales. And so Josh, you are here to tell people all about how to come up with buyer insights directly related to sales. But before we get into that, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are?
Sure. I started out as a kindergarten teacher, so roots in education, and fell into sales accidentally and learned how to generate people that were interesting to talk to and that wanted to talk to me, and sort of parlayed that into an enterprise sales role where I worked for Jellyvision for 9 years, selling enterprise softwares to Fortune 500 companies. I later then worked for Basecamp to help Jason Fried over there help with consumer insights and driving more revenue through his website. And I've since left that company to work with my brother at Animal Pharmaceuticals and also doing some sales consulting as well on the side.
Excellent. So you're a busy man.
Busy. And guitar and triathlons. Don't forget that, Liston, more importantly.
Actually, that is really important. Yeah, I never talk about my own hobbies on this show, but I probably should. Okay, so guitar and triathlon. So you're That's a man right. who is dedicated to practice, it sounds like.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay, good. Okay, cool. So, you know, one thing, the main thing we talk about here on this podcast is how and why people make decisions to buy, right? And so a lot of the way that we tackle this question in our work at GoodFunnel is to figure out how users behave on websites. What are they looking for? Are they finding it? What actions are they taking or are they not taking? And then how do we get more and more into their heads? The way you approach this question, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it starts with identifying who would be a good prospect for a particular product. Is that right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So we use an outbound sales approach, and the outbound sales approach does one of two things. It either has a hypothesis of how you can help someone, or you actually do some customer interviews to find out what caused people to buy. And through those interviews, you get phraseology and language that you can use in your outreach campaign. And when I'm talking about an outreach campaign, I'm primarily talking about sending a sequence of cold emails, cold calls, and voicemails to be able to get people to lean forward and raise their hand and say, this sounds interesting, you know, tell me more. Essentially getting more at-bats. And then the second part of that is once you have an at-bat, how do you take that out at-bat and maximize it? So how do you take a sales conversation and either progress it or realize that it's not a fit at this time so that you can part ways and not waste time chasing.
Right. So let's go back to the beginning part, which is having a hypothesis for who can be helped with your product, whatever it is that you're selling. So what is your approach to start putting together that hypothesis?
Well, let me just give you some examples. So in the last company I worked with, Jellyvision, we wanted to go after a big car insurance manufacturer, a car insurance provider that you've heard of before, one of the biggest ones. So what I did is I looked on their website and actually went through the auto quote process to see what it felt like as a consumer, and realized there were some parts in that auto quote process that we thought we could improve to help them increase their conversion rates and, in a sense, get more people through the quote process so they'd have more of an opportunity to sell their car insurance. So what I did is I did some screenshots and screen captures and wrote an email that said something like this: I was on your site recently and I went through your auto quote process, and at this particular screen I got stuck because I didn't know the difference between A, B, and C because I don't speak insurance. That's exactly the types of things we help companies with all the time. Would you be open to learning a couple ideas we have that might help you achieve that goal? Mm-hmm. And so it's very much taking a look at a site or taking a look at something happening in the company and using that knowledge to then position how you might have a better approach or a perspective they haven't thought of to be able to move some type of a needle or help them achieve something better that they haven't thought of before. So this sort of look for a trigger, look for something on their site, look for something in the news, look for something in the industry, ladder it back to your offering and see if you can't get them to lean forward.
Oh, and so going into that, you already had a hypothesis about what a good potential customer might look like, right? How would they fit into your business? What could you do for them? What are some characteristics that they might have? Is that fair to say?
That's exactly right. And those insights can come from a couple of different places. The best insights, I think, if you're lucky enough to have customers, would come from actually talking to some customers. And I know, Liston, you guys do a lot of work in this area as well. Using a framework called Jobs to be Done framework, you can get at what caused people to buy. And you can use that language. For instance, with Basecamp, one of the things that caused people to buy was they had hired more people and got more projects, and people were remote and they were losing control of where things were. And they couldn't get everyone on the same page. This is language that you only get when you actually start to talk to customers. And you could then use that language in your outreach campaigns, in your emails, and in your cold calls to be able to get people to lean forward and say, yeah, that's me. It's almost like they're talking to me. So that's one way if you have customers. If you don't have customers, you start out with a hypothesis based on what you're seeing in the industry and what your gut tells you, and you try to use that language in cold calls and emails to see if those messages are resonating. And I prefer cold calls up front. It's very easy to be able to give someone a sentence or two. If I were to call a VP of sales, I might say, you know, would you be open to an idea that might help you turn more conversations into customers? And I can very quickly determine if those messages are resonating. And if they are, I can start to scale them up with cold emails.
Oh, I see. Okay. And so you would hit the top 3 to 5 prospects that you have on that list and kind of test the waters that way?
That's exactly right. And I might have 2 or 3 different hypotheses, and they're really just sentences. You know, like the one I gave you is a sentence that I would pitch to VPs of sales if I was selling an offering that helped them turn more conversations into customers. Or if I wanted to generate more leads, I might say, you know, we have an approach. We know that you guys sell to HR professionals. We know the businesses are between 500 and 1,000. We know you're trying to get to HR directors. We've got an idea that might help you get more meetings with them. Are you interested in learning about that? And if you're calling the right person, a VP of sales in particular, and you've done your homework in that way, people should be leaning forward. If you're having 10 conversations and all 8 of them are like, I don't know, it's not really for me, then you kind of go back and rinse and repeat until you find something that's starting to resonate or getting some traction.
And when you go through this process, would you say you have kind of a reliable number of iterations that you might have to do in order to get to that, maybe not magical offer, but the offer that's more has a product market fit?
Yeah, I think so. So I think I like to talk to at least 10 to 12 people. And I like to get at least 35 or 40% of those people to agree to meet or to at least listen to what I have to say. Once I have that, I can then start to take that and scale it figure out who are people like them. We can talk if you want about how to build these lists of people, names and email addresses and phone numbers, which has gotten blissfully easy over the last 6 months. There's so many companies now that allow you to sort of mine LinkedIn and create lists very quickly. And then it's a question of being able to craft interesting emails, which we talked a little bit about, and then send them out on an automatic basis, see who's opening them and clicking, what they call their sort of digital body language, so you know that there's some interest there that might warrant a phone call, so you can sort of, you know, manage your time because you can't call everybody.
Yeah. And so are you targeting, is your one of the insights that you're gleaning that they've opened and maybe clicked through onto a landing or a sales page, and so that tells you they're qualified even if they don't reply, and now you're going to call them?
That's right. I think it typically takes, you know, people are busy. You know, it typically takes 5 or 6 types of touches to be able to get somebody to lean forward. And chances are when you're going to call them, the timing's not going to be right, especially with an outbound. So yes, when I do this, I will send out a sequence of emails and I will take a look at who's opening and clicking. And that to me is an indicator that there's some type of perhaps interest. I don't know. I haven't spoken to them, but those will be the people that I'll queue up for phone calls. Mm-hmm. Rather than calling everybody, because I can't call everyone. I want to call people that are expressing some type of interest. Something else that I've done in cold email is to offer some type of a piece of content that will make them smarter or hopefully show them a better way. So I might allude to that in email that I have this piece of content and ask if they're interested in getting it. And then I would send it to them and then follow up with, you know, what sort of piqued your interest to get the conversation started. I think one of the most terrible things that I hear is when I download a piece of content and I get a phone call from a rep saying, did you get the content? And I say yes, and the phone call's over. You know, a better sort of question that I like to ask is, hey, I noticed you downloaded this content. What piqued your interest? Or maybe you just like downloading content. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that usually lightens it up a little bit, puts a little humor into it, makes people smile, and they start to tell you what it is that caused them to download that content. And sometimes it can be a trigger for continuing a conversation. And sometimes they're just curious about something and it's too early on and they're too happy. And that's good to know too, so that you don't spend your time chasing. And so many reps feel that everybody's an opportunity. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, people only buy when they're ready for their reasons. And to be able to have the skills to be able to listen to that and know when those moments are can save you a lot of time, you know, chasing opportunities that just won't close.
Yeah, absolutely. You said one word there, trigger, that we really pay attention to. And it's part of a proprietary analysis we do called store analysis, and STOR, the T is for trigger. And what we're looking for is exactly what you said, like what's going on in your life right now that made now the time for you to be looking for this, right? Like, what is that thing that made you go out on the hunt and land out of all of the little, you know, grains of sand on the beach, you ended up on my website of all places. Why was it the right time for you to do that? And that is such, not only for your sales process, does that tell you so much about your prospect, but it also tells you how to market in the future.
Listen, you're spot on. If someone gets just one thing out of that podcast, out of this podcast, I think that is the best first question to ask during a sales conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, what changed at Acme that prompted you to jump on the call today? Or if you called them, you know I called you, but what prompted you to take the call? Another question that's really nice, if you're not getting a lot of energy there, and that's, you know, sometimes people don't give you a lot after that question. You can say something like, you know, typically when people download a piece of content or jump on a call with us, it's because they want to better communicate with teams that are remote, or they want to get everyone on the same page because they're not. Does those strike a chord with you? So being able to give them a couple things to see if there's a fit. But if you're getting negative energy to both of those questions, that's a red flag. I wouldn't put that in Salesforce and set the percentage to 75% and follow up. Those are indicators for you that perhaps this isn't a good fit for them right now. You know, your question's a great one. You know, what triggered you to jump on the call? When did you first start thinking about that? Mm-hmm. Is another great question. I want to know how long they've been thinking about it and what they've tried. If they've been thinking about it a long time and they're not making any progress and it's been a long time, I know they're sort of toward the end of the journey, and that's a very different conversation than if they're at the beginning and they don't even have a problem yet. So there's different conversations you have with people based on where they are in that timeline.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. One thing that we always think about when it comes to sales or even before we get to sales, the marketing piece, is we start to list out criteria. What are the four or five things that would make a perfect prospect for us? And one of them is always, now is the right time. There's a burning need for this right now. What are some external signals when you think about prospecting that you try to pick up in order to use as insights that might indicate that it's the right time?
So a great question, and I learned this from Jonathan Stark, so I'm not going to be able to take credit for it, but a great question that I like to ask that really gets at that, Liston, is, you know, why not just keep doing what you're doing now? Mm-hmm. Why not do this in-house rather than hiring a consultant? Is there an urgency around this? So why not just keep doing what you're doing now? And you'll notice when you ask that question, either people will start to defend why they can't possibly keep doing what they're doing now, why now is the right time, or they won't. And so I think that's a really good question to be able to ask to determine the motivation for switching, if any.
Yeah, you know, I'll say that I have had sales conversations before, and that is part of my repertoire that I always go to is why are you hiring me to do this? Why wouldn't you just do it yourself? Or why, you know, you've done it some other way. Why don't you do it that way again? And sometimes I'll ask that, you know, why don't you do this other thing that's really obvious to me, but maybe you haven't thought about it or it just seems too obvious. And occasionally the person goes, you know what? You're right. I don't think I need you. And it's like, okay, great. Let's get off the phone. You go do your thing and I'll set a reminder to contact you in 3 months and see how it went. But we just saved ourselves so much time together.
I think you're absolutely right, Liston. You're getting at something else, is that not everyone's a fit. And I think part of what a lot of the salespeople that I work with is they feel like everybody has to be a fit. And being able to bring a different intent to a call, which is, I don't know if it is, just changes the whole energy of the call. Mm-hmm. And to your point, you almost want to talk someone out of doing business with you. to kind of get at those insights. You almost want to disqualify them, not qualify them.
Now, is it really the best thing for your business to go into it with the approach of wondering if it's a fit and trying to deduce if it's a fit rather than showing people that it is a fit every time?
Well, no, because I don't know if it is. You know, I have found that a lot of times the people that I work with have to have failed a couple times before they bring me on. So a lot of times if people haven't done it or they haven't tried it, or they don't really have the pieces in place for outbound. You know, they don't have a customer hypothesis. They don't have any traction. And they want to hire me to do outbound marketing or outbound campaigns. I would advise them that it's not a fit at that time. They have a couple of pieces they have to put in place first. I could certainly work with them on that, or I can recommend some books or other resources, but I never go into a call assuming that I'm a fit for somebody. I let the conversation and the context sort of dictate that. And it does change my energy when I go into the call. Because when you bring in energy that I'm the one, it makes the conversation sometimes feel like you're a little salesy and manipulative, which can sometimes make people shut down and not tell you the truth. And it's this not telling you the truth that makes you end up chasing people and wondering, because people kind of tell you what they want to tell you. They feel bad about saying no. It creates a really weird dynamic. But when you have truth established, you don't have that dynamic. And so part of that is not going into the conversation with intentions.
You know, what's interesting about that is I often say that most people, particularly in software companies or kind of engineer types, don't want to feel like they're being sold to. And yet, if you do a very good job in the sales process, people will compliment you on it.
That's right.
Isn't it interesting how that works?
It's so, you know, like the old saying, nobody wants to be sold, but a lot of people like to buy. And
yes.
how you sell is just as important as what you sell.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's so fascinating. Okay, so let's get back to cold emails. So one thing you were talking about initially is that you would, you know, you gave the example of the insurance company and you learned about the company and you went in and you figured out why what you had to provide them would be good for them. And you wrote that in the email, or maybe you talked to them on the phone. But if you were doing an email, that's what you would have done. Now, how can we use a process like that and scale it across a large list of outbound, or what is a large list to you?
Yeah. So this is an interesting thing, right? Everyone always talks about scaling everything. And I think in the beginning, it's okay not to scale it. I think it's okay to say, here's the list of 70 or 80 of my ideal dream clients that I want to be able to get. And I'm going to go deep into those 60 or 70 clients, and I'm going to go ahead and look at the websites. I'm going to have an interesting insight that I'm going to share about how they can achieve something better. In terms of scaling it, there are ways to scale it. So if you can imagine, Liston, that you have a spreadsheet in Google Docs and you have columns, first name, last name, email address, the usual suspects. But then you have another column called trigger, and that trigger can hold a sentence. You also have another column called PS, and that can hold a sentence. And so what you can do is you can then use a product like a Quickmail to be able to merge those sentences into an email to create mass personalization at scale if you want to go that route. Mm-hmm. So for instance, if I was prospecting a telecom company, I'd have the name of the telecom company and say, hey, I noticed I was on your website on this page, and I would actually be able to name the page. I would be able to put a graphic there if I wanted to. I'd be able to reference things. And then the rest of it around that would be more the boilerplate content. So there are ways to do that, and you can hire virtual assistants on Upwork to be able to do that. There's a great company called eList Guy that can help, you know, with that, essentially be able to fill out those trigger fields to be able to make the emails a bit more relevant. I'm not a real fan of generic emails, just because there's so many cold email templates out there that everybody's using, and then everyone's looking for the appropriate person, and all these kind of generic emails, I think, are starting to get ignored.
Yes.
But if you take just a little extra time and say, you know, I don't need to scale anything right now. I need to find 50 or 60 customers that I want to work with that I think I can help kick more ass or make more awesome. And I'm going to really consider and look at their business. And that might look like something else I did to land a very big insurance company was I actually made a video. So this was a company that was trying to sell 401k plans. And I noticed that the company, when they were trying to migrate people at my company to 401k plans, it was just confusing. So I actually made a screencast and said, this is what it looked like now. And this is what it could look like. And this is what I think the impact of that would be, because people would understand it better. And I actually made a very crude, you know, screencast. And I did that also with Vonage. I went through the Vonage acquisition funnel because I wanted to be a Vonage customer and just couldn't figure out how to buy the product. And I wrote the CMO a email with my experiences and screenshots. And I said, click here to see a video that I made that might help you do this a little bit better. And it was rough, and I'm not a graphic artist, I'm not a designer, but it just had some preliminary ideas and thoughts. And those emails get huge response rates. They take more time, and you can't scale them, and they're not popular because you can't do 1,000 of them, but you can do 50 or 60, and you can feel good about it because you're really putting in, you know, some work to be able to help people at a much, you know, deeper and more thoughtful level.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I've been experimenting with video, and everything I do is through Gmail, and I can nerd out on tools all day. But one thing that I would recommend, and this is an unpaid plug, but there's a tool called Loom, L-O-O-M. And what it allows you to do is in Gmail, you can record a video of your screen plus a little talking head of yourself in the corner, and it drops a link in there and creates a GIF file right in your email. And you'll get a notification when the person watches it. And I've seen such high success rates with at least eliciting a response where I wasn't getting one before. So think about like a reactivation email where you're going through your list and you haven't spoken to people in months and they're watching these videos. And so I found that to be extremely successful.
I love that. I'm going to share that with my list. And I think you would probably agree with this list in that we also have a tendency to geek out on these tools, but we also have to really spend some time on the actual message, because
Absolutely.
You can also use these, you can also use these tools, and they can feel like spam as well. So do take the time and figure out, not about your product, not about your value proposition, but about how you can help your prospective customer do something better, be more awesome in some way. And what's your idea to do that? I don't think people like talking about problems so much. I've been on a lot of sales calls and problems bring people down, but they love talking about a better tomorrow and about possibilities.
Right.
You know, Jason Fried over at Basecamp does this really well. He does these workshops where you get to see behind the scenes at Basecamp, how Basecamp uses Basecamp to make Basecamp. And this isn't talking about problems. He invites 35 people to sit in an audience, and he starts to talk about how they do things, how they create more calm work environments, how they resolve conflicts, how they work with remote teams. And it's not talking about problems. It's talking about possibilities. Mm-hmm. And people really are energized by possibilities. So you don't always have to talk about problems in your emails. You don't have to talk about probing for problems in sales conversations. You can also talk about this idea of better possibilities and what that looks like, because a lot of people might not know what a better tomorrow looks like.
Yeah, and it's certainly our job to help them understand it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, Josh. Well, so I want to get back to the cold email stuff in a second, but right now I'm going to put you on the spot. I have three questions that I ask every single guest here on the Buyer Insights podcast. And the first is, what is the biggest mistake people make in learning about their customers?
Making assumptions. Talk to your customers. Call them on the phone. First off, go out and read up on jobs to be done. It's a phenomenal framework. Talk to 8 customers using the jobs to be done framework and use those insights to help enhance your product and to help enhance your marketing messages.
And so one thing you're saying is people can go talk to their customers. What's another thing that people listening to this can do today to learn more about their buyers?
In addition to talking to their customers, another thing that they could do is to talk to their customers. I think that's kind of where I'm at, Liston. I mean, if you're lucky enough to be able to have customers, and I know you guys have written about this as well, you can sort of talk to your customers, and then you can really get insights from your customers. Really read up on these frameworks for getting insights of your customers in terms of what caused them to buy.
Sure.
What sort of dominoes tipped over that caused them to buy, and use that language in your outreach or on your website. That is really the sole tip, I guess, that I would have.
All right. Well, you're not the first to say it, and I think it just emphasizes and underscores the importance.
Listen, I was trying to think of something else smart to say, but I'm like, you know what? That's the only thing I've ever done. It worked out pretty well.
Right. I know. Like, well, if it works every time, why do something different?
Exactly.
So what is the one book, Josh, that you recommend?
Barking Up a Dead Horse by Tom Batchelders. That's Batchelder. Barking Up a Dead Horse. Really weird, strange title, which he'll explain when you read it, but that is the one sales book that I would recommend.
Oh, it's a sales book. Oh, okay.
Yep.
For some reason, the title Eat That Frog keeps coming to mind because it's equally strange.
That's right.
Okay, cool. So we'll definitely put that book in the show notes. And Josh, you've been so kind with your time. I'm sure that with all of the insights you've provided today, some people are going to want to get a hold of you after this. What's the best way for people to track you down?
Sure. My website is joshbraun, braun.com. And my email is josh@joshbraun.com.
And should they find you on Twitter or Facebook, anywhere else?
Yep. So I'm also on LinkedIn. I'm also on Twitter at Josh Braun as well. And I'm also on A1A biking on Saturdays, 50 miles in Boca, if anyone wants to join me for a bike ride.
Oh, love that. Okay. You can get a little exercise while you're talking about cold emails.
Exactly. At the red light.
All right, Josh. Well, thank you so much for being here. Thanks for being so open and sharing your insight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Liston. I had a great time.